It's been quite a long time since I dedicated a part of my programme to the ongoing humanitarian crisis in Sudan's Darfur provinces. Although it's not news I follow day by day, I'm well aware of the entity of the tragedy there, with the latest estimates counting over 200,000 people dead and 2 million more at risk. I also read recently that the United Nations Security Council has approved a new peacekeeping force to replace the current African Union observer mission, which is struggling to protect civilians. But the exact makeup and deployment date of this force is still to be determined. In the meantime, more than 2 million people are living in camps after fleeing more than 4 years of fighting in the region, and they're very vulnerable. On the political front, Sudan's government and the pro-government Arab militias involved in the fighting are accused of war crimes against the region's black African population, although the UN has stopped short of calling it genocide. And peace talks are planned for October in Tripoli, involving the government and most of the rebel groups, but until the new UN-backed force deploys, the prospects for an end to violence in Darfur look remote. For an updated picture of the situation, I spoke to someone who is on the ground right now. He is John Di Stefano, director of the Darfur Emergency Response Operation in Darfur, under the auspices of the ACT Caritas Network. I asked him how aid operations are proceeding.
We're operating in a variety of sectors in both South and West Darfur states. There are three states in Darfur, North, West, and South. We're operating in two of the three. Basically, we have a variety of operations focusing on health and nutrition. We also have activities focusing on water and sanitation. We also have peace building, protection, and psychosocial support activities. We have a unit that is called the Emergency Preparedness and Response Unit. And we also have interventions in education and agriculture. And then we have a special unit that is focusing on the assistance to our national partners in trying to improve their capacity to implement emergency activities in Darfur.
Yes, since July 2004, ACT International and Caritas Internationalis have been responding jointly to the crisis. And the Darfur Emergency Response Operation has managed to successfully harness and channel the resources of some 60 Catholic, Protestant and Orthodox organizations and their back donors from around the world into one of the largest humanitarian programs in the area. But John says it is rife with difficulties. What is the situation on the ground at the present?
The situation, as you probably have seen from United Nations reports, does indicate that there has been a continuing situation of insecurity in much of Darfur. It has an impact on activities because occasionally we're forced to suspend activities. Sometimes we're in conditions where we have to maintain a relatively low profile to ensure continuity, to ensure certainly safety of personnel. Having said that, we're trying to do that in the context of an expanding IDP population that we are trying our best to cater to. Because of dislocations of population, as you know, there have been fairly large movements of persons into either existing IDP camps or in some cases into newly formed IDP camps through the course of 2007. And so that really, in short, is kind of the overall context in which we're trying to work.
IDP camps, by the way, are refugee camps for internally displaced peoples, of which Darfur counts some 2 million people. Aid workers in the camps provide everything from food, shelter, healthcare to educational, social and agricultural projects.
John, what is life like for these people? They're fleeing for their lives, aren't they? And there are lots of women and children.
They're in a very, very difficult situation. It's like in virtually any camp, whether it's a refugee camp or an IDP camp. There are huge concentrations of populations, sometimes in the Darfur context as large as 100,000 persons. In other camps, the numbers may be 26,000. 20, 30, up to 100, 120,000 people in an individual camp. As you can imagine, a community of 120,000 people, you know, it's a town. And so it has all the complications that any town would have, but obviously with less resources, with less infrastructure, with less administration. And so quite a bit of the activities within the camps, of course, devolve to the communities themselves. And they are therefore very often, of course, major actors in some of the activities taking place in their camps. They have their own committees. They have their own structures that have been developed. They have their teams as part of the committees that include women, that include youth, that include sheikhs in the communities, elders. And so they play a significant role in the decision-making as to what their priorities are in terms of their needs. So there's a whole host of things that have to be taken into consideration. And yes, obviously, there are large numbers of women and children, certainly, that are affected. And those, of course, are a main priority because they are, after all, the most vulnerable.
And what about the presence of the international community in the region? Do you feel more could be done?
You know, how can I put it? You know, certainly we could always say more could be done, but how much can be done given the current levels of accessibility? There have been problems in terms of transport. There have been problems in terms of supply. And until those bottlenecks are resolved, certainly problematic. It's a huge region. People say that it's, it's the size of France. You know, you're not talking about a small place. And having just come through the rainy season where we had increased inaccessibility because of poor road conditions, that certainly had an impact on some of our activities over the past months. You know, how much more could people do? You know, more actors on the ground, you know, more money into the thing. That in and of itself can only be successful if there's increased accessibility to some of the areas that are currently not accessible for humanitarian intervention.
So you don't feel abandoned?
No, not at all. I would like to say that very, very openly. I think that if it hadn't been for the direct intervention of Caritas Internationalis and the ACT Network, these two major Christian bodies that have come together out of the goodness of their hearts to work to intervene in a humanitarian crisis where the beneficiaries are predominantly Muslim, the situation would be much graver than it is today. And they deserve the credit for whatever little success we may have achieved. That goes without saying.
So, John and his team are toiling on, thankful for the help and support of so many actors around the world. Meanwhile, he says, he's praying for a peaceful resolution to the crisis so that humanitarian needs may be properly addressed.
Certainly, we would all hope for a resolution as quickly as possible so that we can really begin the process of healing and rebuilding. Unfortunately, that's somewhat out of our hands. In terms of ourselves here on the ground, the ACT Caritas Network will be officially launching the appeal for funding for 2008. I believe the operative date is December 5th. That will be done in London. And so we will certainly ask our network partners to be aware of that date and to try and see what they can do to assist in the appeal for 2008. They've been very, very gracious in 2007, and we thank them for all their support, and we hope that they will continue to be as understanding and financially supportive in 2008.
My chat with John came to an end, but as we were about to say goodbye, he told me how uplifting and important it was for his staff and for the people of Darfur to receive support from individual people out there who show they care.
I just would like to inform your listeners that when we explain, not only even to our own national staff, but when they in turn now explain to the beneficiaries that this whole initiative, this whole emergency response operation is a result of individual parishioners, individual citizens in many countries who are Christian themselves, who have dug into their own pockets to try and provide some funding to assist the relief of this predominantly Muslim community in Sudan, it really comes as a tremendous surprise to people, and it's so rewarding to see the understanding in their eyes that this has been accomplished. It really makes the work that we do, you know, that much more rewarding.
As John says, a political resolution is what is most needed to end the violence and the suffering in Darfur. But that doesn't mean it's out of our hands, and there's nothing each and every one of us can do. Yes, we must spread the word to everyone we know, our family, our friends, our neighbours, our national leaders, and whether we choose to make a donation, no matter how small, or to participate in one of the many website initiatives to save Darfur, there is something we can all do to demonstrate our refusal to allow those suffering in Darfur to be forgotten and suffer in silence.